Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month worldwide. It's the most common cancer in the United States. Over 300,000 will be diagnosed with it this year, and about 42,000 will die of the disease. Today, we speak to Garnet Health about breast cancer awareness and prevention, including free mammograms. The Woodstock Film Festival's Youth Film Lab helps educate teens in the art of filmmaking. Brett Berry of Cats Cast, the Catskills podcast, visited with the budding Scorsese's and Spielbergs, and we'll meet them later. Plus, Moving Toward Health's Maggie Fitzpatrick is telling us to choose ourselves, and the indie pop rock singer-songwriter from the Catskills, Shane Renison, is here to talk about two brand new music videos. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Hurricane Milton remains a dangerous Category 4 storm headed for Florida's Gulf Coast. It may make landfall around the Tampa area late tomorrow night. The storm surge could be as much as 12 feet high. Seawater could flood inland for miles. Authorities say that much storm surge is not survivable. Many Florida counties are under evacuation orders. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell just visited the Florida region and says residents are headed for safer areas.
I think the biggest thing that I heard when I was on the ground is people were aware of the threat from Hurricane Helene and the amount of storm surge that it brought. This one is going to bring more. So people are listening. They are evacuating. That's what's really important.
She spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. Israel launched a wave of airstrikes overnight into Lebanon, including toward the Lebanese capital. Meanwhile, a senior Hezbollah leader, Naim Qassem, said the group would not let up its fight against Israel. NPR's Jana Raff reports that's despite the killing of the militant group's leader.
We're in the hills surrounding Beirut, and you can see a huge column of smoke rising from an Israeli airstrike just now on the southern suburbs. It's where Israel has been escalating its airstrikes against what it says are Hezbollah targets, the militant group that it's been fighting ever since the war in Gaza began a year ago. It's been exactly a year since Hezbollah got into that conflict in support of Hamas, a conflict that keeps getting not just more intense, but more complicated. Jane Araf, NPR News, Mount Lebanon, near Beirut.
More than a dozen U.S. states are suing video-sharing app TikTok. Several attorneys general allege TikTok got young people addicted to the app by using manipulative features. They claim this is making body image issues worse for teenagers. TikTok has said that it has many features to protect children. That includes a tool to curb internet addiction. Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Commerce Department reported a drop in the nation's trade deficit. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 12 points in early trading.
The trade gap narrowed by $8.5 billion in August. Exports were up during the month, while imports were down. Crude oil prices have dipped slightly after a sharp run-up fueled by tensions in the Middle East. Retail gasoline prices remain in check, though. AAA reports the average price of regular gas is $3.18 a gallon, more than 50 cents lower than this time last year. Pepsi sales have lost a little fizz. Cautious consumers are no longer spending as freely on name-brand snacks and soda pop. We'll get the latest reading on inflation later this week. Federal Reserve Governor Adriana Kugler just gave a speech highlighting some of the global factors that push prices up around the world, including the pandemic and the war in Ukraine. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Two researchers have won this year's Nobel Prize in Physics. John Hopfield and Jeffrey Hinton have been honored for work with artificial intelligence. Their work built foundations for computer programs that can perform tasks like language translation and facial recognition. The U.S. Supreme Court takes on another gun case today. The question involves the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and it's whether the ATF acted within its authority when it required build-it-yourself ghost guns to be treated the same as other firearms. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports.
They're called ghost guns because these build-it-yourself gun kits, when assembled, have no serial numbers and can't be traced when found at a crime scene. Moreover, buying a kit does not require a background check, at least until 2022, as these assembled guns became more and more of a problem for law enforcement, and the Biden administration issued a rule classifying the kits as firearms under the 1968 Gun Control Act. The statute defines a firearm as any weapon that is, quote, designed to or may readily be converted into a functional firearm. The government contends that the kits thus qualify as guns. The sellers of the kits challenge the rule, contending that a bunch of parts do not count as guns. Now the Supreme Court will decide. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Officials with the Mega Millions Lotto say they are going to more than double the price of a single ticket. It will go from the current $2 to $5. The price increase will take effect next April. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, celebrating the hard work, commitment, and achievements of the 1 in 5 college students who are parents. More at imaginablefutures.com. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. According to the American Cancer Society, 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer, but when detected early, it can be treated successfully. Garnet Health is offering free breast cancer screenings, including mammograms, to qualified individuals on October 26th in Middletown. Garnet Health Director of Community Relations Moira Mensher is coordinating the free breast cancer screening events, and she's joining us this morning with more. We should note Garnet Health is a business supporter of Radio Catskill. Moira, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. 1 in 8, that is such a frightening statistic. How does that influence your decision at Garnet Health to offer these free screenings for folks?
Yeah, sure. So 1 in 8, right? Like that's a crazy statistic related to breast cancer, and it really underscores the importance of early detection. That's why really Garnet Health is committed to offering free screenings. Early detection is significantly improves the outcomes, and our goal is to help as many women as possible.
And, you know, we've mentioned this, and I think it's not too, you can't say this too often, but why is it so important to find breast cancer early?
Well, the earlier you find it, the earlier we're able to treat it before it, you know, metastasizes and gets into deeper stages. So early detection is key.
And at Garnet, you're offering 3D mammograms. Can you explain what that technology is and why is it better at finding breast cancer?
Sure. So we do offer 3D mammograms at Garnet Health, and it's better at detecting breast cancer because it provides a more detailed layer view of the breast tissue compared to a traditional 2D mammogram. This advanced technology allows radiologists to see the overlapping tissue and improves the ability to detect smaller cancers earlier, and it also reduces the chances of false positives.
And I mentioned in the introduction, you're offering free breast screenings, including mammograms, to qualified individuals later this month, October 26th, at the Middletown location. Who are the qualified individuals? What are those criteria for folks?
Sure. So women 50 years or older and who have not had a mammogram in the last year and do not have insurance qualify for our event on the 26th in Middletown and October 30th in Catskills.
And okay, so October 30th here in Harris. And are you requiring registration? What do folks need to do?
We do require registration. You can register at our website at garnethealth.org. And we do ask to be registered at least a week in advance. So at Catskills for that event on the 30th, we're asking for registration by October 23rd. And in Middletown for the event on the 26th, we are looking for registration by the 19th of October.
And that's at garnethealth.org?
GarnetHealth.org.
And if someone is, you know, comes to one of these screenings, what happens if someone, you during one of the mammograms, finds breast cancer? What are the next steps for folks?
Yeah, so during the process anyway, the results will be faxed to a referring physician, and the patient will receive a letter in the mail explaining the results, you know, good or unfavorable. And if the patient doesn't have insurance, it doesn't have a primary care provider, the results will be sent to a resident who will be at the event that day. And we partner with the Cancer Services Program of the Hudson Valley, who will be able to offer financial support, and they partner with us to offer, you know, continuous community resources in the event that, you know, we have an unfavorable outcome. And we even offer support groups. We partner with the Cancer Services Program for financial support from an emotional standpoint. Where we are with the patient every step of the journey to survivorship.
And obviously, October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, there's more emphasis put on it this month, but you're working on this year-round in the community, and are you finding that more people are taking advantage of coming in and getting the information they need because of, as we mentioned, 1 in 8, a frightening statistic?
Yeah, we are seeing quite a few patients all year round taking advantage of the services that we offer. Like you mentioned, 1 in 8 is a crazy statistic, and we do offer this free service all year round. We're just bringing awareness this month and offering an event highlighting this service and providing education and awareness.
That's Moira Mancher. She is the Garnet Health Director of Community Relations. We've been talking about Garnet Health's upcoming free breast screenings, including mammograms, to qualified individuals on October 26th in Middletown and October 30th at the Harris location in the Catskills. There's more information and registration at garnethealth.org. Moira, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
This is Radio Chatskill, and now turning to our election coverage, we are finding that Pennsylvania voters are more likely to trust local election results over presidential ones, with overall confidence in the integrity of voting systems split along partisan lines. That's according to a new Spotlight PA poll. Voting experts were encouraged by the poll's finding that voter confidence is strongest at the county level, which is where most responsibility for administering elections lies in Pennsylvania. Jason Dole spoke to Carter Walker of VoteBeat PA and Spotlight PA about the poll results.
Just over the weekend, on Saturday, the Supreme Court issued a rejection, basically, of the ACLU's attempt to have the court take up this issue immediately. Basically, the Supreme Court said it's too close to the election. We're not going to change the rules now. The rules we have are what they are. We can litigate it afterwards. So that is the end of the road on that case, it seems.
Okay. No further developments that you can foresee before the election that would change anything?
Well, I wouldn't say that, because this mail ballot dating issue has been getting litigated on multiple fronts for years. It's rarely ever just been one case at a time. And there is another case that's at the Commonwealth Court level, which, again, is just below the Supreme Court out of Philadelphia. Philadelphia had a special election in mid-September. Of course, some voters did date their ballots. ACLU sued on that. So there's a possibility that we get a ruling on that before November. And, you know, if it's a decision that just affects Philadelphia and not the rest of the state, that could be an issue. So we could see that, like, appealed up again. But at least for now, and I mean, the advice is always going to be the same, date your ballot and then you won't have any trouble regardless of what the courts do.
Right. And could you just remind us again that there's part of this issue is been brought to the U.S. Supreme Court as well. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, we were talking back in March about the federal case that was being brought against this requirement. That was appealed up to the U.S. Supreme Court last week. The ACLU and the people that they were representing had lost at the Third Circuit level, so they appealed that decision up to the Supreme Court, and now it's remaining to be seen whether or not the Supreme Court will take that.
Okay, well, thank you for giving us that update. And the latest, again, is that King's Bench petition has been denied.
Yes.
Okay, and now moving on to your latest article, the headline is Trust in Elections is Strongest at the Local Level, Pennsylvania Poll Shows. Before we start getting those results, can you tell us where does this poll come from? Who did it and when did they do it?
Yeah, so this was a poll conducted by our partners at Spotlight PA in conjunction with Matt Inc. Polling Group. They surveyed about 800 likely voters in Pennsylvania during the middle of September on a number of things, you know, support for candidates, issues, and one of them was their trust in the election at three different levels, nationally, state, and locally.
Right, and the headline says there that what you're finding is trust in elections is strongest at the local level. So that means that overall, the confidence that people have in the election, they're more confident when the race is more local. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. So the poll has found that roughly statewide and nationally, while 64% of people who were surveyed said that they trusted what those results would be, that confidence jumped up to 78% when the people being polled were asked, how confident are you that your local election results will be counted accurately at the county level?
You know, I noticed that there's really only a 10 percentage point difference between people that are very confident at the county level versus very confident at the presidential level. But one of the things I take away from this is when you average all of that out, it's still less than half of voters who say that they're very confident in these elections.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, a lingering and not even lingering because it's still going on. That's an effect of our candidates at the top of the ticket and even our state and local candidates. You know, saying that we can't trust election results. I think one of the really interesting things I've seen over the years is we see a lot of Republican officials who, you know, they run these elections and they'll say something to the effect of, well, you know, the elections that I'm running are safe and secure and accurate, but, you know, we can't really trust those elections that are happening over in, you know, the big city, Philadelphia and Allegheny.
Yeah, they shift the suspicion elsewhere or, you know, wherever there isn't light, who knows what dwells in the darkness. And this becomes even more stark when you do a partisan breakdown between Democrats, unaffiliated or third party voters, or Republicans. You just want to talk about that difference of breakdown?
Yeah, so obviously we've seen this trend elsewhere as well. Republicans are much more likely to not trust the election results than Democrats. What we had found was that Republicans, 63% of them, said they were not confident at all or not too confident that you know, national elections would be counted accurately, while Democrats, 93% of them, said they were very confident or somewhat confident that election results would be counted accurately. So clearly still a pretty big partisan split resulting from, you know, the Republican rhetoric we've seen over the past couple of years.
And you mentioned, like, you know, some Republican officials that have that, you know, kind of dichotomy there of saying, well, you know, the elections that I'm looking at here in my area, they're okay, but who knows about those over there? On the other side of that, are you noticing any officials who are talking about this as this situation as a bad thing, or even campaigning on it? The fact that people aren't trusting elections and that some people are actually seem to be sowing mistrust in the election.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously that has been something that the Democrat campaign, Kamala Harris, has tried to emphasize. We saw them cut an ad right after the vice presidential debate of J.D. Vance not affirming the 2020 election results still. So that is clearly a message that they are trying to put forward. But I think, you know, what's interesting, especially when you look at these polls, is that their voters are get that message and are on board with it. And you haven't really seen a lot of shifts in Republican confidence in the past couple of years. So whether or not that's an effective method to cut through is another question.
Does it benefit Republicans to have people not trusting election when it's such a close race in a swing state and everybody wants to turn out the vote, right?
Right. You definitely do want everybody to turn out the vote. And, you know, this was a problem in Georgia. If you recall, after the 2020 election, the U.S. Senate race in Georgia was so close, had to be redone. And what they saw was that Republican turnout really got suppressed by Trump's rhetoric that the elections couldn't be trusted. You know, it can be a good strategy. I wouldn't say good, actually, but it can be an effective strategy, perhaps, if you lose, because then your voters are primed to not trust the results and question that loss already. But, you know, cut the other way, as we saw in Georgia.
Yeah, well, that's when, like, things start happening outside of the election to affect the outcome. I mean, it's an effective strategy when you don't essentially believe in elections that function. So that's where we are right now. What else are you looking at on this issue? Like, following this poll, does this point you in any directions for your reporting?
I think it's going to make me pay attention closer to the rhetoric that's getting used around Election Day and really what effect that's having on running the election. You know, something that I've been noticing in the state recently is counties are taking a lot more precaution this time around in terms of security with their offices and their staff. People might have seen that Luzerne County, which is a crucial swing county in Pennsylvania, they put some large boulders outside of their county elections office, I guess, kind of to prevent people from driving their cars through it. And so I think this mistrust in elections and the folks that run them is really having an effect on those people. I mean, I know just from speaking with them that they're stressed about it, and clearly they're taking their security into concern too. So I'm interested to see what happens after the election. If we continue to have a dispute, you know, what does that mean for the future of how we run elections? I can't imagine. We already have a lack of people that want to take their jobs, so I wonder if it further exacerbates that problem.
Carter, before we go, I wonder what else you might be looking at. I want to check in with you again next week. Anything could happen before then, but is there anything that you're looking at that might happen before then that you can give us a bit of a preview of?
Yeah, so we're going to be taking a look at county curing policies. And curing in Pennsylvania is, you know, like we talked about with the Supreme Court case, if you were to make an error and forget to date your ballot, can a county call you and say, hey, you forgot to date your return envelope, come down here and please put a date on it so we can count that? I've made a map of all the counties that do that. We'll be releasing that soon to hopefully inform voters of what their options are. Yeah.
Thank you so much for giving us this update, and we look forward to talking to you again. Thank you. Carter Walker from Vote BPA.
Thanks for having me.
Jason Dole speaking to Carter Walker, VoteBeat PA, a little echoey room he was in there on that audio. You can find more reporting from VoteBeat PA at votebeatpa.org. And Radio Catskills election coverage continues this week. It's New York's 19th congressional district debate on Thursday. Republican Representative Mark Molinaro and his Democratic rival Josh Riley will face off in a live debate to determine the leadership of one of the most competitive districts in the country. Listen live Thursday at 7 here on Radio Catskill or stream it on WJFFradio.org. New York's 19th congressional district debate is produced as part of a regional media consortium, including WAMC and WNYT News Channel 13 in Albany. And then later this month, October 22nd, Democrat U.S. Rep. Matt Cartwright will debate his Republican challenger, Rob Bresnahan. And that debate is coming up here again, simulcast on Radio Catskill, October 22nd. It takes place at Wilkes-Barre's King's College Burke Auditorium and comes to us courtesy of WVIA-TV and WVIA Radio in Scranton. We'll take a break, and when we come back, CatsCast, the biweekly series featuring Catskills culture, history, sustainability, local interviews, and more. Host Brett Berry will meet some teen filmmakers. It's coming up. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Radio Catskills election coverage continues Thursday with New York's 19th congressional district debate. Republican Representative Mark Molinaro and his Democratic rival Josh Riley face off in a live debate to determine the leadership of one of the most competitive districts in the country. Listen live Thursday evening at 7 on Radio Catskill or stream it at WJFFradio.org. That's New York's 19th congressional district debate, produced as part of a regional media consortium including WAMC and WNYT News Channel 13, Albany. Thursday on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Woodstock Film Festival's Youth Film Lab is a three-week intensive filmmaking program for teens in Kingston. On the latest edition of Cat's Cast, host and producer Brett Berry features these young filmmakers, and he's here with more. Brett, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here. So tell me, did you meet the next Greta Gerwig or Martin Scorsese there?
I'll tell you, there are some promising kids in this group, and I shouldn't call them kids. They are teen filmmakers who are part of this Youth Film Lab, which this was the seventh season for the Youth Film Lab, which is put on by the Woodstock Film Festival. And so these really amazing teens were creating documentaries and narrative films in a big studio space in downtown Kingston, where I met them in July.
And they do, this is like the seventh year of this, I think, right?
Seventh year. And so by this point, there are TAs, teachers assistants, who are working with the program who were former students in the program, and also former students who are now through college already and working in film.
And you, as I've said in the introduction, it's a three-week intensive program. It's not like just, hey, come together for a weekend. And they're learning from industry professionals, plus some of their work goes to be screened at the upcoming Woodstock Film Festival.
Yeah, they're learning from professors from SUNY New Paltz and filmmakers who actually came in from the other side of the country to continue to be a part of this program. And the films are right up there on screens with established filmmakers and studios at the film festival later this month.
Yeah. There's a great photo on catscast.com of one of the participants putting up, it looks like a light and just smiling, and you can just see how happy she's is to be there. Let's let's take a listen. Let's take a look through the Teen Lens Woodstock Film Festival's Youth Film Lab. That's an excerpt from Cat's Cast, the Catskills podcast with Brett Berry.
Thanks, Tim.
I was always like such like an odd kid with the creativeness. Like me and my friends have been making short movies, and like my career path before this, in like 10th grade, I was so dead set on making comic books, doing something creative. I knew I'd end up here, but the difference about this is it's professional. It's very professional. This is what I want to do. I love this. I love every second of it. It's the best thing.
That's Sebastian Alarcon, fresh out of high school and already directing a documentary. He's part of the Youth Film Lab, a three-week intensive boot camp for area teens, orchestrated by the Woodstock Film Festival for the past 7 years. The films these teens produced this past summer will feature alongside a full slate of independent and studio films, panel discussions, and celebrity appearances at this year's Woodstock Film Festival later this month. In July, I checked in with this year's youth filmmakers at a large studio space just off Broadway in Kingston, New York, where three production teams made three short films with the guidance and mentorship of professionals in the field. Professor Greg Bray welcomed me to the building.
Sure. So here we are at the Center for Photography Woodstock in Kingston, New York. We're at the seventh annual Woodstock Film Festival Summer Youth Filmmaking Lab. So right now we got a group of young people upstairs, ages 14 to 17, divided into three groups who will be making films over the next few weeks, which will premiere at the Woodstock Film Festival this October. My name is Gregory Bray. I'm an instructor at the Woodstock Film Festival Youth Filmmaking Lab and an associate professor of digital media and journalism at SUNY New Paltz. Come on in, let's take a look.
Behind the door and well insulated from that passing freight train, three teams were deep in collaboration on one narrative film and two documentaries. Editor Rivi Spitzberg and director Josephine Griggs spoke about their documentary titled Search for Expression.
I'm Rivi Spitzberg. This is my second year with the program. I do kind of audio and editing. What are your hopes for this film? My hopes for this film is that it's good and that I'm proud of it and that I have fun time doing it, and I have had a fantastic time. So
you just prompted your friend with a question. It seems like you're a natural interviewer. Tell me who you are and what your role is in this production.
I'm Josephine Griggs. I'm directing the project. My hope for this project is really just for people to connect to it and to see that there are people out there who care about the arts and who want it to grow and flourish. And I hope people just take something away from it. That's what I hope.
And let's backtrack. What is the project?
So it's a documentary about the importance of the arts and how they connect to our development and healing processes. Also, the accessibility of the arts.
Here's an interview clip from that documentary with a creative arts therapist.
Because we are working in nonverbal modalities, we're working with creative therapeutic interventions, we are providing avenues of access to express and heal unspeakable trauma.
The music under that interview was a topic of conversation the day I visited the crew.
I feel like, yeah, not incredibly noticeable because you want to focus on the people in the documentary. But I don't want to say elevator music.
Something maybe not anything like really electronic and poppy. Like,
you know, jazzy.
Jazzy, that's what I was thinking. I want a saxophone and a bass. That's what I want.
It's like too upbeat.
Reminds me of SNL.
Well, my name is Megan Sperry, and I'm the program director for the Woodstock Film Festival Youth Film Lab. Before the lab begins, I meet with the students to do a brainstorming session. And then as a group, we kind of focus that down into like three different project ideas. So this year, the three project ideas were the one that you just spoke to them about, which is a documentary about how the arts can help with healing and issues for teens, whether it's mental health issues or just therapy in general. There's another documentary that's being made right now by another group who's actually out in the field filming an interview at the moment about homelessness in Kingston. And then the third project that's in production right now is a narrative film. This idea of how social media has an impact, not just on a teen's identity, but also on their mental health. The lab runs every summer for 3 weeks in July. And the way that we break it down is doing this pre-lab brainstorming session so that when we meet on day one, we really do hit the ground running because the students have already chosen what their topics are and what the genre is and like what the format is. So week one is dedicated to pre-production. Week two is dedicated to production. And week three is post-production. So they have 3 weeks to make a short film. We usually do a friends and family screening right after the program wraps, and then the film's premiere at the Woodstock Film Festival in October.
How do students find out about this, and what's the process for applying and being a part of it?
Sure. So each year we have to apply for funding. And then once we know we've secured the funding for the next year, we put out a call through the Woodstock Film Festival website, through social media, through community orgs and partners. And there's an application process. And then we set up interviews with all of the applicants. We only have funding for up to 15 spots for students. And so then from there, we'll make our decisions and we'll tell the students who's going to be joining us.
Is there tuition?
It's a free program. The funding that we get supports a free program. And we also offer lunch, free lunch every day for the students. And we really do prioritize students that are in Kingston, in the local high schools. And yeah, it's really fun.
On the other side of the room, a narrative crew has built a teenage bedroom set where part of their film Art Block takes place. Their instructor, David Becker, returns to the Catskills each year to be a part of this experience.
My name is David Becker, and I'm one of the instructors here at the Youth Film Lab. And this is, I think, my fifth year out of the 7 years being an instructor. And it's been, you know, really cool to see the collaboration, how everyone's ideas are part of the final script, and everyone's doing a crew role that they wanted to do. So we have two cinematographers and a sound person, and we have a couple actors. And we have a shot list with 80-something shots on it, so we're working our way through that, and it's been going really well.
Here's a clip from that film.
Hey there, how's the painting going?
Paintbrush. I need a paintbrush.
Oh, well, fortunately for you, we have a bunch of them right here. By the way, I saw some of your work on social media. It's really great. I love it.
I worked for many years at the Woodstock Day School, and I'm a documentary filmmaker. I've worked with the Woodstock Film Festival and had films in the festival. And so I don't live in the area anymore, but this is a great way for me to spend some time back in the Catskills area every summer.
David's not the only instructor who schleps cross-country to participate in the film lab. Saskia Madliner took a job in Nevada, but she negotiated for this time well in advance.
It's in my contract at my salary job that I always have 3 weeks off in July to do this because I love it so much. And I really get along with the other instructors. I have a full-time job in a startup in tech, which is new for me because I've been doing film for 12 years as a science documentary filmmaker. And I was super excited about having access to this generation, like especially. Like, I feel like my generation has failed the world, and I feel like they feel that way. So I'm a millennial, and I like Gen Zers, and I wanted more access to them. Creating something over 3 weeks with them, it's such a great way to get a window into their world. And I hope vice versa, but I like seeing how they function and think. That's huge for me.
And tell me a little bit about the project that your team is working on here at the Film Lab.
They wanted to explore the houseless situation, specifically in Kingston, because they see it every day. Some of the kids really live near Broadway or go to Kingston High, and they see a version of it every day.
Hi, my name is Sebastian Alarcon. I had learned about this project because, I don't know, my teachers were kind of worried I wasn't going to do anything with myself. So I told them I like movies, and they threw this my way. And for the past week and almost a half, we've been working on a short film with my good buddies here, talking about like the similarities and differences, like just the people of Kingston, you know. So we got the voices of the homeless there. We've got the voices of people from uptown. We got a legislator. So, you know, we've got big power and pull with what we're doing. But this experience has been the best. And like in the 3 weeks, I think. This is like the best learning format there is because they just kind of threw us together. They had two people who knew what they were doing, but we were completely clueless. And we've kind of touched every role, like very good as a team, solid. You know, I think the experience has given me, you know, more than I could have asked for. You know, I'm so happy it turned out this way. I was always, like, such, like, an odd kid with the creativeness. Like, me and my friends have been making short movies. And, like, my career path before this in, like, 10th grade, I was so dead set on making comic books, doing something creative. I knew I'd end up here, but the difference about this is it's professional. It's very professional. And when you're working with people who want to do something like this, it's very, how you say, stereotypical for, like, a writer or someone be like, I'm going to make 10 books and they never do anything, and like I'm gonna make 5 movies but you never put it into production, you never finish your screenplay. With people here, it shows me, you know, if you really put the pedal to the metal, meet people that have the same views as you, and you know, just be ready to be embarrassed sometimes, you know. Like, I had no experience coming into this, and there were people here that amazed me, like, still. And people from my team to people, like, around me, just the professionalism, the experience. And this kind of showed me, you know, this is what I want to do. I love this. I love every second of it. It's been 95 degrees, and we've been out there just talking to random people that don't want to talk to us. I love it. It's the best thing.
I've been in Kingston for 49 years. That everything is getting more expensive. The rent is really very high.
Kingston is a beautiful place. You got a couple stuff that you could do up in it. Like you said, with the businesses that's opening, there's many new places to go to. So it's definitely building. Revitalizing, they call it.
I asked instructor Greg Bray,
as a professor at SUNY New Paltz who teaches this kind of thing to college students, what's this experience like for you with younger students who have an interest in this field?
The stakes are different in the sense that they're younger people. Many of them are exploring their interests. Many of them are, you know, looking to develop some skills, but also make sure that they're ready for either entry level in profession as they get a little bit older, or looking to do things that will be meaningful on their college applications. And the other piece of it, since we have 3 weeks intensive where it's just us without sort of like the overhead that one would expect at a college, you get to really spend time almost in like a camp kind of setting to really learn about each individual student, you know, their passions, their interests, their careers, what they're hoping to do, and help them develop in that direction. And another thing, these films are premiering at the Woodstock Film Festival. So even though the folks around the table are ages 15 to 18, their work is going to be screened in an industry festival in October. So with the various levels of experience that these young people have, which is certainly different than what our college students have, the expectation is that there is going to be a professional looking and sounding product on the screen that tells a good story, connects with the community, and really furthers a conversation.
I would just like to add also that because this is our 7th year doing the program, we've actually had students that started with us in the beginning that have actually gone through college and are now, you know, out in the field working.
Students like one of this year's teaching assistants, Quinn.
My name is Quinn. I'm one of the TAs here at the camp. We're just kind of helping the group produce the film, whether that's in the filmmaking, the cinematography, some of the audio work, to kind of help the students out and get a film that we're all proud of. I'm going to college in the fall for film and visual effects, so kind of post-production work, but I'll definitely be sure to stay connected to this group and do this again, because it's an unforgettable experience. It's really valuable.
You can watch all three Youth Film Lab projects at this year's Woodstock Film Festival. Full schedule at woodstockfilmfestival.org. Cat's Cast, the Catskills podcast, is a biweekly production of Silver Hollow Audio. I'm Brett Barry.
Thanks to Brett for that. And you can find all of the Cat's Cast episodes at catscast.com. That's KAATSCAST.com. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're moving toward health with Maggie Fitzpatrick. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cooked breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, matching strangers with different political beliefs to just have a conversation. Go to WJFFradio.org and click on the One Small Step logo to join us.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. She joins us every Tuesday to talk about her column in the Democrat called Moving Toward Health. She's here now, and today's Moving Toward Health is titled Choose Yourself. And Maggie, good morning.
Good morning.
And you start out with an interesting question that I can answer yes to. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you wish you didn't say yes to attending an event or doing a favor for someone else? Maybe.
I'm sure most people can say yes to that
question. So what is the idea behind this column of choosing yourself, and how does that help you health-wise?
Yeah, so this happened to me recently. Uh-huh. It happens more often than I would like because I end up saying yes to things that I just shouldn't. But this happened recently where I said to a family member that I would attend a party, and it was a few weeks before the party was supposed to happen. I RSVP'd yes, you know, looked in my calendar. I'm like, oh, weekend is free. Yeah, great. Like, let's do it. And I was really excited to go. We haven't seen their new house yet. Like, it was, you know, it was going to be an exciting time. However, the drive was about 6 hours each way.
Okay.
And when it came time for the party to actually happen, we had faced some like unexpected stress that week, right? And so then the night before, I was like, I just don't think that this is the best idea for us to spend our entire weekend away, most of it in the car, right? Traveling this much to be away from home, to not set ourselves up for success for the next week. Right. And when I started to feel that way, I started to feel really anxious because I really don't like it when I say I'm going to do something and then I don't follow through on that. Like, it really bothers me. And so I, you know, was going back and forth talking with my husband about it. And he was like, you don't really have to convince me. Like, I'm I'm good to stay, because he felt the same way. Right. He felt like, I would love to go to this party. I would love to see my family. I would love to, you know, participate in this event and be there and be part of it. And that is going to set me back at a time where I don't have that extra to give, right? There's going to be times where you have that extra to give to other people and you can make that 6 hour drive each way. And yeah, you're going to be tired, but it's okay, right? Like, you can come back and have a shortened amount of time to prepare for the week and you're going to be fine, right? And there's other times where you don't have that extra, right? It's like the cup analogy. Like, you can only give from the overflow, right? From when your cup is full. And we didn't have that at that time. And so I had to make the decision to say that, unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to attend. And I didn't like doing that. I didn't like it. It made me upset, right? It made me feel like, oh, I'm letting people down. I don't want them to feel bad. I don't want to feel bad. But as soon as I did that, I felt relief, right? I felt relief because I knew that I was making the best decision for me. And that's what I needed to do at that moment.
I think it's so important to think about that in terms of your own health. I mean, you mentioned that when you were looking at your calendar at the time you were invited, okay, things seem to be open and that's fine. But then throughout those next few days or weeks, things may have happened and you encountered some stress, and that's leading to your health and how you're feeling. And so this may not fit into those plans. Also, this time of year, we're going to get more and more of those kinds of invitations, I'm thinking. It's that time of year where people are having parties or gatherings. There's Thanksgiving. There's, you know, the holidays. It's that time where you kind of really have to sort of look at your own health before you maybe make these decisions.
Yeah, it's a balance, right? Like, it's hard to navigate that, because sometimes you have to not put yourself first as much, right? Because some things are more important than others. And then there are those opportunities where you can say, you know what, I'm going to have to sit this one out. I'm going to have to skip this one, because taking care of myself is more important at this moment than attending this event, right? And like you're saying, as more and more of these, you know, invitations come and the calendar starts to pile up as we get through the end of the year, it's really important that we start to, you know, take a moment to really, you know, check in with ourselves and say, how is this going to affect me? Do I have this energy to give? Is this going to, you know, set me back a lot? Am I willing to make that sacrifice? Right? Am I willing?
Yeah. And also in the column, you mentioned how it ladders up into your goals, right? You have your own health goals, whatever those might be. And if making this choice or attending this event would have impacted those, that's also a factor in your decision making.
It is. Yeah, it is a factor in my decision making. And it's hard to make that decision to say, I'm going to put my own goals ahead of XYZ event, gathering, whatever thing for someone else, right? And it's okay to do that, though. It's okay to do that, even if you're not seeing that a lot around you, or the people around you maybe aren't making that decision. It's okay. And the more that you do it, the more that you're going to inspire others to take better care of themselves too. And it's really challenging, but that's the only way we can kind of break that cycle of always giving all of ourselves away and never having anything left.
Did your family members understand when you made that choice of not attending?
Of course. Yeah. Of course they did. And then my birthday was last week, and my husband threw a birthday party for me this weekend. And the same thing happened with other people. You know, they reached out and they were like, hey, like, I'm so sorry I was going to home, but I just can't make it. And it was totally fine.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. Yeah. You know?
choosing yourself. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health. You can find the column we were just talking about, Choosing Yourself, in the physical copy out there in the wild on the newsstands, or the digital copy, which is at scdemocratonline.com. Maggie Fitzpatrick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a video music premiere, music video premiere, two of them actually, from Shane Renison. We'll find out more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Radio Catskill relies on dedicated listeners like you who are willing to take that next step and actually become a supporter. Do your part to keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Keep it free and available to everyone who needs it. Go to WJFFradio.org to make your donation now. That's WJFFradio.org.
Apple Pie Palooza returns to the Catskill Brewery October 12th, kicking off Radio Catskill's fall fun drive with a lot of apple pie. Come by, eat pie, buy pie. And if you have a killer apple pie or apple dessert recipe, make it, bake it, and enter it into our baking contest. Go to WJFFradio.org to register your dessert now. Or just stop by and get pie at Apple Pie Palooza. 3 to 6, Saturday, October 12th at Catskill Brewery, Livingston Manor.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Shane Renison is an indie pop rock singer and songwriter from the Catskills, and he is premiering two brand new music videos Thursday at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. He's here to talk about it, but before we get to it, let's hear a little bit of it. I'm watching the video, but we're going to hear a little bit of Irrational. Shane Renison and Irrational, one of the two music videos he's premiering at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center this Thursday. Public is invited to attend. Shane Renison's here to tell us more. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here. This is kind of cool. Two video music premieres. We usually don't get this unless we're at the VMAs or something. Right here in the Catskills. Why did you decide to do like a public premiere of your music videos?
So basically, I'm at the point now where, you know, we're working so hard, like me and the guys that I'm working with, and I'm still so new to it that I don't really have a big fan base. So like, I'll put all this work into something, it'll come out, and I'll be like, wow, I'm like really proud of this work. And I'll release it and, you know, get no engagement on it because it's just like, I'm, you know, so still very new to what I'm doing. So when I got these two videos back, I was like, wow, like what can I do to like really give these a little bit more attention, create more of a platform for them? So I was like, well, let me spend a ton of money and make a whole event out of it. So that way people can kind of come out and experience, you know, the work we did on the big screen to really showcase not only like, you know, my efforts, but also the filmmaker Brandon Warden is a friend I went to school with and he's doing some really amazing things. So being able to showcase his work and also the one song Irrational is actually a live version with a full band. And all of the bandmates that were there are just amazing human beings, but also amazing musicians. So it's just a way really to like create a little bit of pomp and circumstance around this work that we all did.
I mean, it's very cool that you're doing this because you're bringing, as you said, you know, you're trying to establish yourself more and you're trying to bring it out more. But like you put your own money behind this to bring it out. This is a free event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to make it just really easy for people to come out. You know, I'm at the point too where it's a big write-off financially. So it's like I'm looking at it more as my business, where it's like you got to be willing to spend, you got to be willing to invest. And you know, I'm not at the point where I'm ready to like charge people to come out to. I just, you know, I want people to be very welcomed. I want to be very accessible to people. The things that I'm doing. So I'm okay to spend to create that type of an experience.
What is it about doing something like this, which I'm old enough to know when a music video premiere was like a big thing. Now it's like, oh, you can just put it up on TikTok and go viral.
Or YouTube.
This to me almost seems as like, and this sounds weird to say, but like old school in a way of doing like a listening event, premiere party video event. Why is it special for you to do this versus something like where I'm just putting it up on TikTok?
I think because I'm kind of struggling where, you know, my generation, I'm right on the fringe of that where, like, I remember a life before TikTok, before social media and stuff like that. But now I'm very much in it where I have to utilize these platforms. But it is just so frustrating when you put all this work, all this time, all this energy into something, and just consumer interests nowadays are so short-lived where it's like you put something out and, you know, your favorite artist puts an album out. It's great. You listen to it for a week and then you're like, oh, I can't wait for the next album. It's like there's just such a fast-paced way that we consume all of our entertainment. It really just, I think we're all just experiencing just a warped sense of reality because we have so much stimulation in our phones, our, you know, all the TV that we have access to now. So it's, this was like a way for me to like really make more of a moment out of it. And you know, this will be good for the local people. And then Friday, one of the videos is going to come out on YouTube and that'll just be like a very much like, it just goes there.
Yeah.
Gets what it gets, and then a week later, people will forget that it came out. Well, but it's just the reality of it, you know.
It sounds like there's something grounding about having an event for your community and being surrounded by folks in your community, and also for you as an artist bringing this to your community.
Yeah, I think, you know, so there's like two aspects of it that I'm trying to build, where you have the online element, the social media and stuff like that. But what I feel gets lost with that is the real world. You know, what I say, like the boots on the ground part of it, where it's like, you know, you can have this life that looks great on social media, but it's like, what are you really doing in your day to day when the camera's off? And that's where my head has been at recently, is like doing the work to, like, you know, real human beings, like, and giving back to and creating an experience that people can actually come and have. They don't have to have their phone out to know that they're experiencing something. And like that to me is what I'm trying to do with this. And I've been trying to do more of that alongside of like keeping the dialogue going on social media. It's like two components to it. Yeah.
But you kind of have to be on in today's world.
I know it's soul sucking, but I found a better balance this year with using social media and stuff like that. I think there's a way to utilize it in an effective way without letting it control you. I think setting, you know, if you spend an hour on your phone putting together content, it's like, turn your phone off and then go walk around in the woods for a little bit. Like, right. There's got to be that balance, because it's just so easy to just create a laundry list of things that you want to accomplish in life, but like especially like social media and stuff like that. And like it just never ends. You'll create one piece of content and then now you have to, oh, I have to go make a new thing. It just never ends. Yeah. You got to create those boundaries, those parameters for yourself so you can feel good about the work you do on your phone now, but then realize it's midnight and you need to stop looking at your phone.
You're not doing it just for the grid, as the kids say, or exactly. You're doing it for yourself. And, right. And this is another step in that direction. Let's remind folks about the premiere on Thursday, where, time, and then also there's an after party and food? What?
Yeah. So the event is, it's going to be Thursday, October 10th. That's going to be at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. And we're renting out the lobby. So we're renting out the theater for the screening. But prior to that, we have the lobby rented out for 2 hours, starting at 5 p.m. People can come into the lobby. It's going to be a catered event. We have my good friend, Chef Jonathan Martinez, is going to be catering it. He's an amazing chef. We're going to have La Salamina, which is another amazing place in Hurleyville. They're putting together some really high quality charcuterie. We're going to have beer from the Catskill Brewery, cider from Seminary Hill, wine and spirits from Decant, which is an amazing, beautiful wine shop in Hurleyville. My good friends at Forthright are going to have some mead wine. There's going to be a lot of free food, a lot of free drinks. So then that's going to go on for about 2 hours where people can kind of mingle, get some drinks, get some food. I'm going to be doing some live music with a special guest on drums for that. We have some merch made, so I'm going to be selling some t-shirts. My friend Samara with All That Glitters Is Old, it's a thrift shop in Hurleyville. She's going to be there selling her, some of her awesome stuff. So it's just going to be a whole thing. And then at 7, we're going to usher people into the theater and then screen two very special music videos, one of which is Irrational, Live at the Outlier in 2, which is a series that I created where basically I invite some of my top musician friends into the Outlier Inn, which is a beautiful space in Mountaindale, and we just work through some of my material. So we did that back in January, got this video for Irrational. And then the second video is the official music video for Long Road, which is one of my favorite songs off of our album Irrational.
Yeah, we gotta run, but go support your local artist, Shane Renison. It's going to be Thursday. More information at srenison.com. That's all for this edition. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists,
artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, Latif Nasser here, co-host of Radiolab, a show that explores the outer edges of what we think we know. Wednesday at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. Broadcasting from our studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. Listen local.